Hello, and welcome to our series, Career Resilience, where we talk with people about their career path and their career journey, and maybe we can all learn from each other. My name is Jan Daniluk, and I'm a human resources professional in London, Ontario, Canada. I work with Fort Keist LLP, and I work with my clients to help them with the HR side of their business. We hope that you will enjoy these discussions with real people about real challenges and real working life situations. Welcome. My guest today is Emily Goff. Emily, welcome.
Jan, thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
Well, it's a real pleasure to have you here. I'm looking forward to our conversation. We have a few things to talk about. I'd like to chat a little bit about your career trajectory and things you've done in your career. We're going to talk about the fact that you're a podcaster and that you have the Room to Grow podcast. So you're a pro podcasting. And we're also going to move to a more serious conversation when it comes to talking about resilience, and that is working and carrying on working and handling life while going through a serious personal relationship breakup. So I really appreciate that you're willing to be open and candid about that, because I think it's something that probably most of us have been through, and most of us have had to, you know, work and so on at the same time. And so I just really appreciate that you're willing to chat with us about this.
Oh, no, I'm happy to. And I'm always somebody who tackles uncomfortable conversations head on. So I have no problem talking about this type of stuff. I think it isn't talked about enough. So I'm here to help normalize it in whatever small way I can. So, yeah.
Just on that, do you think you're unusual in being so candid?
Yes. I think that the online space especially is changing the conversation a lot, which is so nice to see. I do think that I tend to open up about topics that a lot of people would not.
Yes.
and I know that because sometimes when I come out with certain topics, I have moments of terror before I hit publish, and then we'll have massive vulnerability hangovers afterwards. So that's when I know that I've opened up about something very significant that some other people would maybe prefer to sweep under the rug. And I am also very protective of my personal life. Mm-hmm. I have very clear boundaries, but there are things that have gone on in my life that I open up about because I have felt very alone at times, as many of us have, as I have moved through certain issues. So I open up about them to help to destigmatize them in some small way for somebody out there. If it impacts even one person, then I feel that I have achieved my ultimate goal. Yeah.
That's what I always feel. If even one person gets something out of this, then we are doing what we're supposed to be doing. So
exactly. Exactly.
So let us start, Emily, with your career trajectory, because you started out in corporate and then you changed careers. So let's start with a bit about the corporate type of role that you were in.
Sure. So I have, I actually have a degree in criminology and psychology, but I ended up in the corporate sales in the automotive world for 11 years. It's a long story, how that sort of came about. And it was never my intention to stay there that long, but it just sort of worked out that way. It was paying the bills while I was doing other things. I was building other things on the side, buying a house, all of those things. And I knew that I would eventually leave there. It was a great job. I was so well treated there, but I knew I didn't belong there, and that wasn't where I wanted to be. And I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. So that was sort of part of the problem, where it's like, oh, I don't know where else to go. And I started to teach bootcamp classes on the side, got some fitness certification, started teaching bootcamp classes. And that sort of opened up this world for me of the online space. And I was like, oh, there's different options available that I didn't even know about. And I wanted to explore something that part of what appealed to me, and I think appeals to many people about the online space, is the freedom. And freedom is such a core value of mine in a variety of different ways, including financial freedom, time freedom, mm-hmm. location freedom, all of those types of things. And I ended up going back to school while I was still working full-time to become a holistic nutritionist, because that went very well hand in hand with the fitness and all of that. And eventually quit my corporate job to take that online full time. And then that has taken me down more paths that I wasn't even expecting. I ended up getting into then podcasting and business coaching instead. And that then evolved more recently into like human connection and essentially relationship coaching, like transformational coaching, because that has ultimately been threaded through everything that I have ever done. And it was sort of this moment of people kept pointing out to me that these are my biggest skills. And I didn't even recognize that within myself until other people kept pointing it out. And then I started seeing it. I'm like, oh yeah. Like this whole connection piece comes really naturally to me. It doesn't come naturally to everyone else. And there's a huge amount that I can teach here, but not much more than that. It was the fulfillment piece for me, because that was when I really started to flounder last year. Was I felt like I had just lost my sense of purpose in my business. And I started to really, really struggle with that. And I was going into full-blown panic about it. And I finally came to the realization that the human connection was where my attention needed to be. And it's the perfect fit for me. This is what I have been working towards the whole time.
Yeah. And it all counts. Everything that you've gone through has led you to doing this and to doing it well. So every experience helps in our next experience. Tell me about being a podcaster and what that is like for you. So you post on Room to Grow, I think twice a week. Mm-hmm. So tell me about
Tuesdays and Thursdays. Yeah, I've technically launched three podcasts. Room to Grow was my second. And the third one was a friend at the beginning of the pandemic. We launched like an extra one, but we ended up not continuing with it because it was just too much for our schedules. But I launched my first podcast back in 2017 with a co-host, and we loved it. We were having a great time with it. But there came a point where our businesses were just going in different directions. And she's still like a great friend. We parted on mutually happy terms. And I launched Room to Grow the day that our other one ended. So back in June of 2018. And I just wanted to create a space to have these types of more uncomfortable conversations and a lot of the things that I cover in the podcast. And the podcast is just such a gift to be able to talk to incredible humans. Like, it creates these connections where selfishly I feel like this is so cool that I get to do this as a job and talk to people. And it just happens to be that other people benefit from the conversation at the same time. So it works out really well that way. But I feel really strongly about the podcast because I think that we connect to people so much more intimately when we can hear their voice. Yeah. We can take them with us when we go to, when we're doing errands, when we're walking the dog, when we're cooking dinner, whatever that looks like, we become part of people's lives and routines. And I feel that way about the people that I listen to as well. And it's just an incredibly powerful way to get your message across.
Yeah.
And to have, to dive into some deep topics, because there have been all kinds of times now, Jan, we've sort of spoken about this before, where if I have something going on in my life that I'm going to end up teaching on, I never talk about it in real time. Obviously I wait until, it's done, it's processed, all of those things. But then when I do eventually come out with the episode, it feels very cathartic for me to be able to talk about it, to speak it into existence, especially with some of the particular things that I have talked about on the podcast. It felt necessary. As necessary as breathing, because there were things that I was having to keep in for so long that then when I was able to speak them out loud on the podcast, it felt like lifting a weight from my shoulders. Even though it was terrifying to come out with some of the very personal things that I've come out with, it felt incredibly liberating at the same time.
And what episode on Room to Grow are you up to at this point?
Oh gosh, like 265, I believe, something like that. Yeah.
That's amazing. And along with being that human connection coach and all that good work that you're doing, you also teach people how to do podcasts. Is that still part of your suite of services?
It is. I have a DIY course that people can enroll in to learn how to do that. And what sets it apart a little bit, it's not my main focus anymore. I'm focused more on the yeah. relationship and sort of life type coaching. But what sets the course Podcasting for Impact apart is that I take so much of that connection piece and it's threaded into the entire course.
Yes, I did take the course, which I think I took probably after I started my podcast. And I remember going through it and thinking, gosh, this is so helpful. Whether it was making me feel that intuitively I was doing the thing that I wanted to do and accomplish, or whether it was just sort of some ideas that were helpful. It was amazing. And of course, I have told you that you and I have gone on many walks while I listen to you in my ears. And it's just so pleasant. Now, I listen to podcasts when I chop vegetables. I listen to podcasts when I'm, you know, cleaning or doing any chores, because I think, why not? I don't like chopping vegetables. So why don't I just do something else at the same time? So you frequently chop vegetables with me too.
I love it. I love it.
I did want to ask you, Emily, what does resilience mean to you? This obviously my program is called Career Resilience, but when you think of resilience, what comes to mind for you?
Strength, but a very quiet strength. It's not something that is necessarily spoken outwardly. It's not something that's necessarily shouted from the rooftops, but it's something that I tend to find, and maybe this is just me because I'm very intuitive, but I've spoken to other people who feel the same way. So I don't think that's just me. When you can sense resilience in someone, mm-hmm. you can sense someone's courage and their bravery mm-hmm. almost innately a little bit as you have a conversation with somebody and there's something that's very quiet about it. It doesn't need to be loud or, you know, shouted yeah. on billboards or anything like that. You can sense it. And typically when I sense that in someone, I want to know more about their story, because people who are very resilient have typically walked through the fire in huge, huge ways, because resilience is not born from sunshine and rainbows. Resilience is born from going through some really fucking hard shit and coming out on the other side stronger than you were before. Yeah. And it also means sometimes taking the shit that you've been given and turning it into something really beautiful, turning it into gold in a lot of ways for yourself, and to allow it to also soften you in some ways, because resilience can harden you in some necessary ways in terms of some necessary boundaries and learning to be more discerning and those types of things. And that's really powerful, that those are necessary things. But if you allow it to, resilience can also soften you in a lot of ways and to make you a kinder, more compassionate, more empathetic human being, because you then have a better understanding of the human experience.
That is a lovely definition of it. I love that idea of quiet strength, because I think that that's what so many of us have, and that's what carries us through. And I think that in one of my podcasts, somebody said to me, you know, what is resilience to you? And I think I said, it's just keep on keeping on. One foot.
Listen, is that too?
One foot in front of the other. So I would like to switch our topic to talking about working while going through what I consider quite a horrific relationship breakup. So I wondered if you could tell us a bit of your story, starting wherever you'd like, but it occurs to me maybe around that Christmas Eve point.
The dark and stormy Christmas Eve.
So if you could chat about that, I'd appreciate that.
Sure. So when I was in the corporate world for 11 years, I was also engaged in a 9-year relationship with my partner at the time. He and I owned a house together. We had for years. We were by all outward and I believed inward appearances, very solid, stable relationship. And one Christmas Eve of 2018, we got a knock on the door, and his previous girlfriend was at the door to inform me that he had been having an affair off and on with her for our entire 9 years together. And that then led to the uncovering of just devastating lies that, my life, my entire life had been built upon that I had no idea about, which was very challenging to my own identity because I've always identified as a very honest, genuine person. And it felt like I had been lying to people, even though I hadn't, I just simply hadn't had this information. He also had a house, a secret house, 170 meters from our driveway, that had, he'd had that sort of on the side for several years. And it just turned into this, whole thing. We walked by that house every day. We had conversations about it. We noticed when it was purchased, turned out that it was purchased by someone very close to him who then gave him all kinds of access to it. And we would talk about the renovations, and it turned out that he was the one who had been doing the renovations even. So it was just one thing after another. And I ended the relationship right away, but he and I were still working together closely. He was living elsewhere. Turned out he had gone to live at the secret house. I just hadn't found out about the secret house at that point yet. And we were working together to do the renovations and everything like that. So it made for a very challenging 6 months while we were waiting to put the house up for sale. But I also learned a huge amount in those 6 months. And I don't think I would not be the human I am today in my mind, in a lot of the best possible ways, if it wasn't for those 6 months that felt torturous at times. But they molded me and made me a lot more compassionate and gave me a view into the human experience and into him and all kinds of different things that I would not have been able to benefit from otherwise in the long term. I could not have predicted that when I was in it because it did not feel like a good time. But after those 6 months when the house sold, then I took off to Bali and I ended up living there for the better part of a year until the pandemic hit. And I'm currently in Canada, but we'll see where I go next. That remains to be seen.
When you were living together, did you have any sense that things were anything but good?
Hindsight is 20/20, right? Because looking back, yes, my intuition was screaming at me to the point where within a couple of days of me ending the relationship, it was as though the fog had lifted. Like I no longer felt this deep crippling anxiety. My stomach was no longer in knots. I just felt calm. I was devastated, but I was calm. And in ways that I had not felt in years, because it had been so gradual, this buildup of lies, that I hadn't realized just how much it was overtaking me. So looking back, there are absolutely instances and red flags where I'm like, that wasn't right. Like that should have set off alarm bells. And there were times where they were setting off alarm bells and I would have conversations with him about it. And he would reassure me, tell me everything was fine. And I believed him more than I believed myself and what my own body was telling me. So those were decisions that I made, that I chose to stay in that relationship. And I chose to ignore what my body was trying to tell me.
So here you are in a lengthy relationship. The relationship breaks up in a horrific way, as they said. What does that do to your self-esteem? Anything?
You know, it's interesting because with any infidelity, it's always going to bring up self-esteem issues and be like, why wasn't I enough? What's wrong with me? You know, all of these types of questions can start to come up. And you do have to take a really hard look at why, at least for me, I had to take a little hard look at why I was tolerating certain behaviors that I would never tolerate now that I have done a lot more work on my own self-esteem and sense of self-worth and mm-hmm. what I deserve. In other ways, I tell people, you know, I feel like he actually made it easy for me in some ways, because the ending of the relationship was such a complete shit show. And it was so horrific and devastating. That kind of a blow, like it had to blow up the way that it did for me to believe that he was actually capable of doing the things that he'd done.
That's quite a thing to say.
Yeah. And it actually did me a lot of favors, because if it hadn't been, all of these things that came out went so far against the man that I thought I knew, and the man that a lot of people around me and around us thought that we knew, that I wouldn't have believed it if it hadn't blown up the way that it did. So it needed to blow up that way in order for me to feel that. And why I tie this in with self-esteem is because I remember having this moment very early on in the breakup, like within a few days, of thinking, I deserve so much better than this. So much better than this. So even though I was having all kinds of questions come up around myself, because it blew up in such a dramatic fashion, it actually almost made it a little bit easier for me to be like, well, I definitely don't deserve that. Because nobody deserves that. Nobody deserves to be cheated on, no matter what. But if it had happened in much more subtle ways, I think I actually probably would have struggled with self-esteem even more. Hmm. And that sounds a little bit backwards, but it was so dramatic that I was like, I do not deserve this. But there have been all kinds of layers that I've had to unpack around self-esteem and everything else since. And it's like an onion. Like you peel back one layer, you sort of deal with it, you heal it, and then you think you're good. And then something else comes up and you find new layers. And you're like, oh, really? We're not done. Okay. Because it's part of the journey, right? You're never going to hit an end goal. It's always going to be a continuous thing. And that's part of life.
So when it comes to forgiveness, did you forgive that person?
I did. And forgiveness is for us. Forgiveness is for us much more so than it is for the other person. And something that I think is important to note, I did a podcast episode on forgiveness, where I think a lot of times we will have people in our lives that I can't be the only person who does this. We'll play out the scenarios in our head, right? Somebody has wronged us in some way, and we'll play out the scenario in our head of how it would go differently, the conversations that we would have with them, the apologies, the imagined apologies that they would give to us, that would give us that sense of closure and allow us to forgive them. First of all, that's rarely ever going to happen. Yeah. And I am somebody who did experience the person who was asking for my forgiveness, who was apologizing, who was saying all of the things that people want to hear, that I would want to hear, that I thought I wanted to hear in the moment. And I felt nothing. I felt nothing because I wasn't prepared to forgive him yet. So I say that because we can ruminate and we can think about all of these imagined things. They're the things that keep us up at night, right? And we're going through the conversations in our head. If I had just said this, if I had just done this, if I had done this differently, if they would just say this to me, it doesn't matter. If we don't do the inner work on ourselves, if we are not prepared to accept the apology, and for a lot of times that apology may never even come, in which case you have to reconcile within you, are you going to be able to forgive and to let go? And that also doesn't happen quickly. And another part of this is that sometimes you may need to forgive in percentages almost, and you may never get to 100% forgiveness. You may only ever get to 90%, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. That doesn't mean that you haven't forgiven the person. It means that you can still be, as long as you can be a healthy, happy, functioning human at 90% forgiveness, and you are okay with that for yourself, then maybe that's as far as you need to forgive. That's up to you. That's going to look different for everybody.
Do you think that sometimes people get a bit addicted to thinking about it and thinking about those scenarios and those conversations that didn't happen and so on?
Oh yeah. Yeah. That rumination piece. And you're speaking to an overthinker and somebody who can get stuck in rumination quite easily. So and I think that the pandemic has created brought forth whole new layers of that for us, because we don't have any of our usual distractions. Yeah. Our worlds have become very small, and it's not forever. It's not, it's temporary, but it's long enough that I think most of us have had to face layers of ourselves and darkness within ourselves that we didn't even necessarily realize was there until there was not nearly as much noise or distractions to divert our attention, our attention away from the real issues. Mm-hmm. And that's why the pandemic has been really interesting in a lot of ways. And I'm seeing a lot of people who are shifting their priorities and looking to do like some deep work because they're realizing how much pain they've been in when they didn't even notice it before.
Yeah.
And they're in a lot of pain and they want to actually work through the pain at this point, which is where I come in to help them.
Emily, what were you working during this period of time? I don't think you were in your corporate world at that point. So what were you actually doing for a living while this was going on?
So I had only gone full-time with my online business 6 months prior to my relationship blowing up. And my partner at the time had been very encouraging of me to quit my job, even if, you know, I had a lot of concerns. I did not want to be financially dependent on anybody. I've always paid my own way, all of those things. And he knew I wasn't happy in my corporate job. And he encouraged me to leave. And, you know, I give him credit for that, even though I think knowing what I know now, I think that there were some underlying ulterior motives for that, because I think he enjoyed maybe having a little bit more control over me, or at least imagined control over me. But regardless of whatever the intentions were, I don't know if I ever would have left my corporate job without that support. Mm-hmm. So that was really, really valuable. And I give him a huge amount of credit for that, regardless of whatever the motives were. But those last 6 months of our relationship had been, there'd been a huge amount of emotional turmoil in those last 6 months. And he was disappearing for long periods, just like unexplained absences, bailing on things. I was just in this constant state of increasingly emotional turmoil and anxiety and stress. And I was having a really hard time coming up with business stuff creatively because I was struggling so much with that. So when the relationship blew up, my business was not financially okay. Like I was not in a good place. And I speak from a huge amount of privilege that I was, he still continued to pay much more than his allotted amount. If we had been doing 50-50, like we normally would, he continued to carry through with all of his financial obligations. And I was still contributing as well, but he was contributing much more so than I was. And I give him a huge amount of credit for that. It made it much easier for me. But I was still trying to work, trying to build up this business. And I was having a hard time. I was having a really hard time. And I talk about this in episode 117 on the podcast, where I go into more about the affair and all of that stuff. Because one of the things that I think helped me get through the breakup was not still being at my corporate job. I was not taking care of myself. I was a wreck, a complete wreck, like standing on the ashes of my life, basically. And it was, even sometimes thinking about getting through an entire day felt too overwhelming. I had to basically take it hour by hour. It's like, how do I get through the next hour? Mm-hmm. Okay, how do I make it through till lunchtime? How do I make it through until 3 p.m.? It had to come in such small increments. And there would be times where I'd be emailing clients at like 2 o'clock in the morning and people would be like, were you up at that time? And I had to sort of come up with excuses because I wasn't talking about what was going on in my life. It was just, it's a lot. It's a lot. And when you're dealing with a really traumatic experience like that, I'm so privileged that I was able to go through it the way that I was. And I was so aware of that in the moment too, because that is not the privilege that everyone has. There are all kinds of people who still have to go to a corporate job every day and things like that. And it is hard. It is beyond hard. It's devastating. You feel like you have to wear a mask all day long and then you're exhausted. And I can't even imagine what it would be like if you also have kids on top of that. That's one more layer. It is very trying, very trying.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to imagine how many layers you have to put on to go out and face people. But at the same time, you were still turning out podcasts, right?
Yes. Okay. I was still coming out with podcasts every week. Yep.
And you could just turn on what you had to when you were doing those podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah. I would take the notes and stuff. I would come up with topic ideas. I would bring on guests, all of those types of things. And that was, again, that really kind of gave me a sense of purpose, because then I would hear from people like, oh, that episode like really helped me. And I would hear back that kind of feedback and stuff that kept me going. That really powered me through. And it was the part of my job that I enjoyed the most at that point, because I was in this weird transition between a couple different areas. I wasn't finding, again, like quite as much fulfillment in the paid work as I wanted to. And the podcast still helped bring people in for the paid work, but it gave me more fulfillment. Yeah.
Okay. Did you tell people initially what was going on in your life?
Very few. There were only maybe 5-10 people tops who knew what was going on. I'm a very private person anyway. Anytime I did tell anyone, there were so many dramatics attached to it that I would end up having to manage their reaction as opposed to them like comforting, not because I was going to them looking for comfort necessarily, but I was having to then just like answer their thousands of questions, which I still had thousands of questions at that point as well. And it took far more energy out of me than I could bear. Mm-hmm. I knew that when the time was right, and that was hard for me because I don't enjoy like lying or anything like that. But that was actually out of pure self-protection at that point. I'm like, I cannot manage your reaction. And there were also, for privacy reasons, there were also certain people I didn't want to know until things were settled, like financially with the house, the sale, all of those different things.
Yeah. When I was young, I had an early failed marriage, and not with the one I'm married to now, but with the one I was married to then, who was a very sweet guy, but it was a failed marriage. And I didn't tell anybody for, I think, 7 months. And just like you, they would say, how is he? And I'd say, great, he's great. I didn't really know how he was, but I assumed that maybe he was great. But I'm very private, and I put that mask on every day to go to work because I was in a corporate job, and that was between me and starvation. So that's what we do. You know, I think we're so brave about all these things, because when life hits you so hard that you're just on the ground, but you have to pick up and carry on, that's tough. And I think it's also, almost all of us have something like that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We've all gone through, had to move through like really moments of deep pain like that, where you have to, there are times where you just have to carry on, and it makes it difficult, but that's part of where resilience is built too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the truth. What kind of advice would you have for people that are going through the kind of struggle that you went through with relationship breakup and still having to put one foot in front of the other?
First would be to have a huge amount of compassion for yourself, because everything in your life, from drinking a glass of water to getting up in the morning, is going to feel a thousand times more difficult than it normally does. And it's really easy to fall into beating yourself up and feeling like, you know, I should be able, like all the shoulds, I should be able to do this. This shouldn't be this difficult. All of that can start to come bubbling up to the surface, and just showing yourself so much compassion that you are moving through something that is really hard, and that's okay. It's not fun. It's not pleasant, but it is part of life. And the more compassion you can show for yourself, the easier you will make the process. Not because the process is going to be easy, but because you're going to make it a lot more difficult if you spend all of your time and energy criticizing yourself for not being over it, or whatever that looks like. That's a really, really significant part of it. The other thing is to find ways to move your body. It changes your physiology. It shifts your mood. You can move the emotions through you. I can't tell you the number of times that I've gotten under a barbell and just cried for most of a workout. And it doesn't feel good at the time, but you're always happier at the end of it that you did it. Even if you feel incredibly weak, both physically and mentally, it helps to shift things in you. And it's really, really necessary. And just, I'm just going to list like some basic things here too, in terms of just hydrating and eating something. I'm somebody who stops eating altogether basically when I'm under massive stress. Some people can go the other way. Some people will kind of stress eat and sort of overeat when they're under a huge amount of stress. And one is not better or worse than the other, because neither one are great for us. And if you are somebody who struggles to eat anything like me, just do whatever you can to get any nutrients into you. Even if it's something like a smoothie or something like that, where you can pack some things in and get it down pretty easily, just something. And don't be afraid to ask for help either, because there are people I'm certain around you that want to help, but so many of us struggle with asking or receiving the help. We don't want to ask for it. We feel like we have to do everything alone. And we also don't want to receive it. We actually have difficulty receiving that love. And that's like its own podcast episode that we could get into as to the reasons why that is. But that's something that is really important, because people want to help. We want to be helpful. And if somebody is offering you something, they're offering because they want to. They're not offering for like fluff reasons. Like if somebody is genuine and they're offering to help you, let them, because they want to, and both of you will feel better.
I do want to finish with asking you, what advice would you give your younger self?
I think to have patience in the process. I think that that's a really important part of it. And I'm somebody who would never, past or currently, list patience on my list of strengths. But I do think that it's really, really important to have that patience. Have that patience with yourself. That's a big part of the self-compassion, because the self-compassion doesn't happen just like that. It takes time to build up. And it's such an important part of the process, because we want things to happen so quickly, but we don't get to control the timeline. And the more we try to control the timeline and the more resistance we are showing to like doing things our way, the longer the journey will likely take, and the far more difficult and likely unpleasant you may make it for yourself along the way. So if you can find ways to be patient, to show acceptance of the journey, and to stop showing so much resistance to what life is handing you, acceptance doesn't mean that you can't do things differently and like make your own choices, but acceptance just means accepting what is. And that can often take a great deal of patience.
Yeah, that's such a true point. Is there any final comments that you would like to leave us with, Emily?
I just think that the more you cultivate resilience in one area of your life, the more it shows up in other areas. So another example that I give, I'm going to bring it back to movement. This is not everybody's favorite style of working out, but I prefer to lift heavy weights. And I always just see so many parallels between lifting weights and that resistance piece, that resistance training piece, right? And how that translates to real life. And our physical strength and our mental strength can be built and honed at the same time. And when you're building up strength in the gym, you're also building up mental strength too, because a tough workout is far more of a mental battle than it is a physical one, because your brain will give up on you long before your body will. But our brain is like, no, I've had enough. No, that's too heavy. No, like our brain is the one that tricks us, and it gives out long before our body will actually give out on us. Like our bodies are far stronger than we think they are, but it all comes back to the brain. And there's nothing like, to me personally, there's nothing like completing like a tough, heavy workout. And then the sense of mental strength that gives me, and mental resilience, translates to other areas of my life. So whatever your preferred workout is, it doesn't have to be barbells. I suggest doing that as much as you can. And even just things like walking, like just moving your body in some way.
Are you saying at the same time you work out, you're actually having a conscious thought about building strength up there as well? Or are you just saying workouts help build strength?
I think workouts just help build strength. Like sometimes you can have moments of like huge accomplishment though, where you're very aware, like, wow, I just moved 300 pounds around. That's pretty cool. And that also gives you a sense of pride and confidence as well, which is also going to translate to your everyday life. So however you prefer to move your body, movement is life.
Yeah.
And you don't have to have access to a gym right now. You don't have to have any of those things to just move. You can move your own body weight around in all kinds of different ways. Mm-hmm. So whatever that looks like for you and however you prefer to do that, you're going to end up seeing the results in all the other aspects of your life at the same time.
Because it's all connected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're not actually serious about 300 pounds for yourself though, right?
I am. Yes.
What?
Yes. Yeah. I 300 pounds is actually all I have access to here. I'm very fortunate. I have a barbell and weights at home right now. I bought them at the beginning of the pandemic, and I'm actually tapped out on one of my lifts. I could lift heavier than 300 pounds, but I only have 300 pounds.
Isn't 300 pounds quite a bit?
It's a lot. Yeah. Okay. Especially for my size. Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't misconstruing what 300 pounds is. So
No. My giant male coach is somewhat impressed that I can move around 300 pounds. So with that stamp of approval, I guess, yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah. You have some bragging rights there. Emily, if people are looking for you, and I highly encourage people to look for you, where will they find you?
Best place to find me is over on Instagram, over at Emily Goff Coach. Goff is spelled like cough with a G. And so pop in DMs and say hi. I would love to chat. You can also find me over at the Room to Grow podcast. And my website is Emily Goff Coaching. I think the best, for anyone who wants to work with me, the best way to work with me right now is one-on-one. So I'm working with people more specifically one-on-one in terms of like relationships and connections and working through some of the layers that can be uncovered to sort of transform your entire life, how you show up in your career, how you show up in your relationships, all of those things. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for chatting with me today.
Thank you, Jan. This is a blast.
A blast. And to our viewers and listeners, thanks so much for joining Emily and me today for our conversation around some difficult topics, but certainly many of you listening have been through similar things, and it's a lot like lifting 300 pound weights, like it evidently does literally. So thank you for joining us. Find me on LinkedIn. I'd love to connect with you. I'm also wherever you get your podcasts and also on YouTube. So look forward to seeing you again. And thanks so much for today.